All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's great to see you all. Welcome to the Daily Power Parsha. This is a short dose of daily Torah inspiration, and I'm very glad that you're here with me today. Okay, so today we're going to start the second of our two Torah portions, which is the portion of Balak. Now, Balak is named after a king. Balak was a king of the nation of Moab, or Moab. And so, hold on 1 second. Yeah. So basically, Balak is a king, and he's in the way on the journey of the Jewish people into the land of Israel, like we discussed yesterday. And he's afraid of the approaching Jews. He decides, now he shouldn't have been afraid because the Jews weren't going to go after him. But he's afraid and he begins to incite his people against the Jewish people. And he then proceeds to hire a mercenary, a prophet named Balaam, who was a prophet for profit. Basically, he hired himself out to curse. And the intention was to, God forbid, curse the Jewish people. So that's what's going on kind of in the beginning of the Torah portion. So I'm going to share my screen with you. And then we can do it inside and take a look at the beautiful lessons that we will discover together. Okay, so this is double portion, Chukas Balak or Chukat Balak. And this is going to be in the middle of the fourth reading that we begin to discuss this. Here you go. Numbers chapter 22. It's interesting, by the way, the last verse of the first of the two Torah portions is actually the first verse of chapter 22. So this verse right here actually belongs to the first of the two Torah portions. The second portion begins, the Torah portion Balak begins from the word Balak, right here. Okay, so I'm going to read inside and follow along. We're going to get to some insights, some take-home messages, all that good stuff. Okay. Let's start reading. Give me 1 second. Okay. Hold on. Whoops. Can you give me a second here? The power parsha 220. All right, let's jump in. Balak, Numbers chapter 22, verse number 2. It says, Balak the son of Zippor saw all that Israel had done to the Amorites. Remember I mentioned about the Amorites who were lying in wait? They were lying in wait, and then the mountaintops caved in on them or miraculously crushed them. Okay, basically, the Amorites also were other nations. Sorry, Sihon and Og, two kings. We skipped this piece, but the Jews went to battle against some other nations along the way who started up, provoked the Jewish people, and went to war with them on their march to Israel. So that's what happened. So Balak at this point sees what the Jewish people are doing to those that are starting up with them. So Moab, the nation, became terrified of the people, for they were numerous, and Moab became disgusted because of the children of Israel. So take a look. Moab, one nation, said to the elders of Midian, a second nation. And look at the fear-mongering. Look at how the fear is being sown. Now this assembly will eat up everything around us as the ox eats up the greens of the field. Balak, the son of Zippor, was the king of Moab at that time. Okay, so I said that before, Balak, the king of Moab. So he basically sends messengers to the officials of Midian saying, we got this Jewish problem. And what's the problem? They're going to destroy us. They're going to destroy everything like an ox eats up the greens of the field. You know, you have a hungry ox, the ox is going to eat everything. So the people are going to destroy us. So then they begin to hire Balaam, who is the evil prophet, or a prophet for hire, a mercenary. He sent messengers to Balaam, the son of Baar, to Pethor, which is by the river of the land of his people, to call for him, saying, okay, so here's the message. A people has come out of Egypt, and behold, they have covered the eye of the land. I love how that's in quotation marks. The eye of the land. I think it means kind of like wherever you see, wherever you look, there's Jews, right? The Jewish problem, this is something that the anti-Semites have trotted out for centuries, for millennia. Egypt, Pharaoh had his Jewish problem. Oh, they're too numerous. Here we have Balak, the king, sending messengers to Balaam, the prophet, again about the Jewish problem, and they're stationed opposite me. So look, what does he want him to do? Verse number 6. So now, please come and curse this people for me, for they are too powerful for me. Perhaps I'll be able to wage war against them and drive them out of the land, for I know that whomever you bless is blessed, and whomever you curse is cursed. So this fellow Balaam has powers to bless and curse. And so what he's thinking, the king's thinking, look, if we pay you good money, you'll curse the people, and that's it. Then they'll fall to us. If you can kind of harm them spiritually, then our physical battles might be successful. There you go. So what happens? The messengers come. So the elders of Moab and the elders of Midian went. Remember now, the two nations are splitting the cost of this hire. They're working together to hire Balaam. Okay, so they both nations send their messengers with magic charms in their hands. They came to Balaam and conveyed Balak's message to him. So look what he says. This is what the prophet says. He said to them, lodge here for the night, and I will give you an answer when the Lord speaks to me. In other words, stay the night, and by tomorrow morning, I'll let you know. Why? Because he's waiting for the Lord speaking to me. God would communicate with Balaam typically at night in the form of a dream. And so he says, wait the night. Indeed, that night, God came to Balaam and said, who are these men with you? Balaam said to God, Balak the son of Zippor, the king of Moab, has sent them to me, saying, behold, the people coming out of the nation. Okay, basically he repeats the message and what the request is. So look at God's answer. God said to Balaam, you shall not go with them. You shall not curse the people because they are blessed. In other words, Balaam asked God, can I go? Should I go? Can I curse this people, the Jewish people? And what's God's response? It's unequivocal. It is absolute. Do not go with them. Do not curse the people because they are blessed. That's the answer. Clear cut, yes? Clear cut, 100%. No wiggle room there. So what happens?
I have a question, please.
Yeah, go ahead.
So if this Balaam wants to do bad, how does he have a direct voice to God?
Because, God, excellent question. Our sages tell us that God wanted to give the nations a chance. He said, look, I'm going to give you a prophet that's like almost on par with Moses. So you're going to have somebody who's, you know, aligned with all y'all, and he can pull off a lot of stuff. You know, he can communicate and give you messages, and we'll see. We'll see what you use him for. So the Jewish people had Moses, and Moses conveys a set of moral ethics and values, right? The Torah. And the nations of the world have a prophet, and what do they use him for? To curse other people as a hired gun. So that's it. So if the nations...
It's not the Jews that can talk directly to God, then.
Yeah, but God can speak to whoever he wants. So God appointed this person to give him a shot. Basically, in case the nations of the world ever said, you know what, it's not fair. You never gave us a Moses. You never gave us a prophet. Had we had a prophet, a person connected on high, we could have also been, you know, on board, etc. God says, I gave you a guy. And what'd you do? You turned him to a novelty act. It's like, oh, this guy has powers. Let's curse. Maybe give us the Super Bowl winners to play, you know, for gambling. In other words, they use the powers for nefarious purposes. But that's what our sages say. Okay, now let's move on to, actually, this is, if you notice at the top of the page, fifth reading, which is for Thursday, which is today's reading. So the rest of the narrative, continues. So what happens? So now Balaam wakes up in the morning. So when he rose in the morning, he said to Balak's nobles, he said to the messengers, go back to your country, for the Lord has refused to let me go with you. Basically, the answer is no. You waited the night. I asked God. God appeared to me. God says, don't go. So that's it. I'm not going. All right. Next, the narrative continues. Moab's nobles arose and came to Balak and said, Balaam refused to come with us. So look what happens. Balak, the king, is not, he doesn't take no for an answer. He continued to send dignitaries, more and higher in rank than these. So he sent greater messengers. And by the way, the understanding is he sent greater promises of cash. Basically, if it's a money issue, right? I'm going to say, the counter offer, I'm going to give you more. So what happens? The second set of messengers came to Balaam and said to him, so said Balak the son of Zippor, please do not hesitate to come with me. Come to me, for I will honor you greatly. Yeah? And do whatever you tell me to do. Whatever your price, blank check, whatever you want. Maybe he made him a first offer, right? $1 million. Curse the Jewish people. No. Okay? You're playing hardball? No problem. Blank check, whatever you need. So please come and curse this people for me. All right, here we go. Here's the response. Balaam answered and said to Balak's servants, the second round of servants, even if, I love this, even if Balak gives me a house full of silver and gold. Well, now you know what he wants, right? Now you know what he wants when he says, even if, right? He says, I still cannot do anything small or great that would transgress the word of the Lord, my God. Now, so he doesn't tell them, he's such a character, this guy. He doesn't tell them, no, I already told you no. I already asked God, forget about it. No. He says again, remain here overnight and I will know what the Lord will continue to speak with me. In other words, what he's saying is God has told me no, but thank you for the counter offer. Thank you for upping the bid and for promising whatever we want. You know what? Let me give it a shot. Maybe I can, maybe we can swing this. Maybe I can make it work. All right, here we go. So what happens the next night? Verse 20, God came to Balaam at night and said to him, if these men have come to call for you, arise and go with them. But the word I speak to you, that you shall do. In the morning, Balaam arose, saddled his she-donkey, and went with the Moabite dignitaries. He ends up going. Why? Because that second night, what did God tell Balaam? If these men have come to call for you, arise and go with them. Now, there's a problem in the narrative. The problem is, it seems like God changed his mind, right? It seems like God has now changed his mind. God said no. Hold on. Mark says, my Rashi translates to his house of silver and gold. Yeah, all the silver and gold, right? Balak, right? He says, even if you give me all your riches, I still can't go. In other words, if I do go with you, that's the price that I'm naming. This is Priceline, and I've named my price, right? I want everything. Give me the whole, all the treasure. Look, Balak was desperate. He gave him whatever he wanted. But again, I want to focus on a seeming glitch in the narrative, because Balaam asks, God tells him no. The second time, God says, go. Arise and go with them. So what's going on? Has God changed his mind? Has God changed his mind because Balak was persistent? Has God changed his mind because Balaam wants the cash? What's going on here? Did God have a change of heart? First, God says, don't go. Then God says, go. But with the caveat that whatever I say, that's what you're going to do. But why does God change his mind? So there are many different explanations for this. Many different explanations. One explanation. Give me a second. One explanation is, it's in the previous reading. There's a difference in language. Okay, hold on. Show you a bit of a nuance here. If you look here, when God first tells Balaam not to go, he says, you shall not go with them. But the Hebrew is, lo telech imahem. Don't go imahem, with them. And that means with what they want you to do. Whereas the second time, when God says go, he says, Lech itam. He doesn't say imahem. He says itam, different Hebrew word. Now, in the English, it's translated the same. God says before, don't go with them. Now God says, go with them. It seems like a change of heart. But if you look precisely at the language, before God said, don't go imahem. And now God says, go itam. The difference is, imahem means with their plot, with their intention, with their agenda. So God says, don't go with their agenda. Go only itam. Itam means physically with them, but not emotionally or psychologically with them. Does that make sense what I'm saying? In other words, you can physically travel with them, you know, in the same location, but don't go with them in spirit or with them in intention. You can go with them in body, itam, God says the second time, but don't go imahem, with them in spirit. That was the first message. So this is one of the explanations given by the commentaries, is that although God seems to be changing his mind, first a no and then a yes, it was two different things. God says no to going with them in spirit, yes to going with them in body. Okay, that's one answer. But I think there's a more basic answer that doesn't even need any textual nuance or any deciphering of the Hebrew. Very basic idea. Yeah, a person, let's say you and I could speak with God, and we would ask God to do something that we shouldn't be doing. And we say, God, you know, what do you think about this? Good idea or not good idea? Let's say God says, no, that's not a good idea at all. That's a terrible idea, right? Okay. And let's say you come back a second time and say, okay, I heard the no, but I want to do it. Huh? Hold on one second. Is it the lawn people? Double check. Okay, so imagine if then you got a clear no, right? You say, God, can I do such and such, which is not a good thing? And God says, no, of course not. Like, don't do that. And then you come back the next day and say, God, I really want to do it. What's God going to say? What's God going to say? There's a Talmudic statement that says, translated as, in the path that a person wishes to lead, God helps him go there. In other words, God tells you a no. But if you persist, God says, fine. I'm not saying yes. I'm just giving you the freedom to choose your own way. This becomes really a template for you and I. In other words, when I say template, what I mean is, This is our story. We go to God and we say, hey, God, what do you think? God says, no, bad idea. Then we say, but we really want to do it. So God says, fine, you really want to do it? Go ahead. Not that I'm telling you it's a good idea, but I'm telling you, if you really want to do it, I've given you free choice. Go ahead. So when God says the second time, if these men have come to call for you, in other words, if you really want to go, arise and go with them, that's not God. That's not God saying, I'm giving it the rubber stamp of divine approval. That's not what God is saying. God is simply saying, you want to go? Go! Right? Be my guest. It's a free country. It's a free world. You have free choice. So go ahead. I'm not going to stop you. God doesn't stop us from making bad decisions. God tells us once, don't do it. God tells us in Torah, not a good idea. If you choose to ignore and choose to do it anyway, don't expect God to swoop in and save you from yourself. That's not how it works. God does not stop. God does not stop us from making bad decisions. God can only suggest, and then ultimately, we have choice. Mark is writing. I have a note from Be'er Basada. Says lecha instead of lech for you. Right. Interesting. Im lekra lecha, as opposed to lech. Okay, good. Another textual nuance in the text about going. I think it's that probably is the same idea as going with them, or going, two types of going with them in body or with them in spirit. Okay, but the next part of the story is also fascinating. So again, the first, a few points. Number one, just to recap what we said so far. Number one, fear-mongering. The notion of we have to be afraid of the Jewish people because they're numerous and they're going to destroy us, that is an angle used by Pharaoh, and it's an angle used by Balak in this case, And it's a trope that is used, an anti-Semitic trope that's used again and again and again throughout history. It's beware the Jews, they're etc. I don't even want to say the negative things, but the fear-mongering. We faced it throughout our history. We have a clear example here once again with Balak. Next lesson we learned was about using your gifts for the good. Balaam is blessed with gifts of prophecy and gifts of divine communication. And what does he use it for? He used it as a hired gun to get wealthy and to harm other people. And that's not the best use. That's not the highest use of his abilities. He was given powers. Moses was given powers. Moses used his powers for good, for godliness, for positivity, for light in this world, for Torah. And what does Balaam use his powers for? All sorts of nefarious, dark activities. So that's the second message. Use your gifts. We all have gifts. Use them for good, right? May the force be with you. May the Schwartz be with you. But whatever it is, use your powers for the good. Next. So two lessons so far. Third lesson. God only tells you once. If you persist, that's on you. God is not going to stop you, but don't convince yourself that God is approving it. Just because God doesn't swoop down and bear hug you, right, from moving forward and stop your progress, doesn't mean that God is saying, I approve of this message. That's not the case. God already told you no. You come again, God says, fine, go ahead. Not because he changed his mind, but because you want to do what you want to do, and God says you got free choice. So that's the third message. Final point of the story. Look at what happens. So again, verse 21. So what happens in the morning? He wakes up. He saddles his she-donkey. There's a lot of interesting, and I'm not going to get into details here, but let's put it this way. There are interesting commentaries as to that relationship. Let's just put it that way. Fine. Next, and he went with the Moabite dignitary. So now he's on his way to go back to Balak and to curse the Jewish people, God forbid. So look what happens. God's wrath flared because he was going, which is another indication that God never changed his mind. Because if God had just said, yes, go, and now God's getting angry, so now we're getting mixed messages. First a no, then a yes, then a no. What's going on? It's been no all along. Again, just to reiterate what I said before. God said no. Balaam said, I would like to go. God says, fine, but God's still not happy about it. God didn't say, I want you to go. God said, I'm not going to stop you from going, but God is upset about the choice. So what happens? God doesn't stop him, but he messes with him. He sends an angel. Look at this part. It's such a bizarre story. You got to love this. So God sends an angel. God stations an angel on the road to thwart him. Okay? So God puts an angel with a sword. The she-donkey saw the angel of the... Verse 23. The she-donkey saw the angel of the Lord stationed on the road with his sword drawn in his hand. Imagine, right? Invisible angel, but only the donkey now is seeing it. God has opened up the donkey's eyes to be more of a prophet than Balaam. Balaam doesn't see the angel, but now a donkey sees. Balaam's donkey now has this perception. Again, God is also messing with Balaam, saying, why do you think you have these powers in the first place? I'm giving you these powers. If I wanted to, I can give the donkey more powers than you. Anyway, so what happens is that God puts an angel there with a sword. The donkey sees it. So what does she do? She turns aside from the road and went into a field. Balaam's upset, and he doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't see the angel with the sword. So what he does is he beats the she-donkey to get it back onto the road. Okay, so basically a little detour in the road, right? The donkey swerves out of the way from the angel, gets back onto the road. Then, okay, angel's not done yet. The angel of the Lord then stood in the path of the vineyards, with a fence on this side and a fence on that side. So they came obviously to a more narrow path that had a wall on each side or a fence on each side. So before it was a road with fields. So she was able to pull off into the field and go around the angel with the sword. But now the angel has now set itself up again in a path of vineyards that have a fence on either side. So now there's nowhere to go. So what does she do? The she donkey saw the angel of the Lord, and she was pressed against the wall. She pressed Balaam's leg against the wall. So she basically tries to squeeze in between the angel and the wall and squeezes Balaam's leg against the wall. Are you with me on this? Yeah, you can't just go into the field. No, it's not making sense? Donna, okay, let me explain. Imagine you're driving down a road that has a shoulder on it. Yeah? Fine. And imagine there's a car that's, I don't know, car stalled in the middle of the road, but you can pull off to the shoulder. You can go around, you can swerve around. So that's like going from the road to the field back onto the road again. But then sometimes you have barriers on both sides of the road. There's nowhere to go. Let's say they're doing construction on a highway and they put up these concrete barriers on either side. And now there's a car stopped. So now what are you going to do? So maybe if you have a small enough car and it's wide enough, you can now squeeze the side, but maybe you're just going to scrape the side of your car.
The metaphor is that I'm not clear on.
You
alluded to yourself, the Lordness of things and the, I don't understand.
The metaphor. Okay, wait a minute.
The Lordness and the sexual overtones.
We're gonna get there. Hold on. We're gonna get there. Okay. Okay. So I was explaining the actual route, but okay. So we'll get there in a second. I just want to explain describe the story, and then we'll get to the deeper stuff. So she squeezes his leg against the wall. He beats her again. The angel continued going ahead, and he stood in a narrow place, and now there's no room to turn left or right, not even to squeeze. So what does she do? Verse 27, she crouches down under Balaam. His anger flared. He beat her with a stick. So he beat her three times. So what happens next is the Lord opened the mouth of the she-donkey. Now she begins talking. And she says, what have I done to you that you've struck me these three times? Like, I'm only protecting you. There's an angel with a sword. Why are you beating me? Balaam said to the she-donkey, for you have humiliated me. And if I had a sword in my hand, I would kill you right now. He gets humiliated very quickly. I mean, humiliate is a weird thing to say. All right. The she-donkey said to Balaam, am I not your she-donkey on which you have ridden since you have first started until now? Am I not your go-to she-donkey? Have I been accustomed to do this to you? In other words, have I humiliated you before? Have I gone astray or done something that you didn't like before? No, he says. He has to admit no. In other words, what she's saying is, if I'm not following the path that you want me to follow, it's probably for a good reason. The Lord opened Balaam's eyes, and now he sees what the donkey has seen the whole time, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing on the road with a sword in his hand. And now the angel chastises him. Why have you beaten your she-donkey these three times? Behold, I have come out to thwart you, for the one embarking on the journey has hastened against me. When the she-donkey saw me, it turned aside these three times. Had she not turned aside before me, now I would also have killed you and spared her. The angel says, she saved your life, buddy. Look at this. You beat your donkey. You should have hugged your she donkey, right? You should have been grateful for all that she's done. Balaam says to the angel of the Lord, I have sinned, for I did not know that you were standing on the road before me. Now, if it displeases you, I'll return. The angel says, go with these men, but once again, the word I will speak to you, that you shall speak. So Balaam went with Balak's dignitaries, and this is where we're going to close out the story today. So we have this wild story with a donkey and the angel and Balaam. A few messages that we can draw from this story. Number one, I mentioned before, God's message to Balaam and for all of us is prophetic ability and insight, that is a gift from God. Don't take credit for it. Right? Our wisdom, our insight, our perception, it's all from God. God chooses who he wants to have that insight. God chose Balaam. But God was telling Balaam, dude, I can choose a she-donkey over you. Like, it's not about you. It's about me. You don't have intrinsic gifts. You don't have some sort of special ability that's self-induced. It's not about you. It's about me. And the moment you recognize that, is the moment that you should be humbled by the fact that I have gifted you with this and then use it for good. This guy doesn't get it. And he's given a choice again, right? God said, the angel says to him, I'm not going to tell you not to go. I'm just saying that you're only going to be able to do what God says. This gift is coming from God. You're not going to be able to deviate from what God says. Balaam then should have said, all right, in that case, I'm turning around. But guess what? Balaam went with Balak's dignitaries. And yeah, the angel said, go with these men. But the angel also said, but the word I will speak to you, that you shall speak. And if Balaam is getting paid to curse the Jews, he should have just said, deal's off. There's no reason for me to go. But he doesn't. He goes. Because in his mind, in his heart of hearts, he's still going to try to catch an opportunity to curse the Jews. And that happens as the Torah's narrative continues. We'll speak about this tomorrow. He tries three times to curse the Jewish people. Three times he gets up on a mountaintop or a hilltop overlooking the people to try to direct the curse of them. And three times, as he opens his mouth to curse, out comes blessings that God throws in instead of the curses. Balaam doesn't get it. He should not be a sympathetic character in this story. Sometimes you might sympathize with the villain. Not this time. This is a guy who was given every divine gift. He was given every opportunity. He was told by God what to do. He was shown up, by his own donkey. He communicated with the angel. The message again and again and again was either don't go, or if you do choose to go, it's not going to be good. And what does he do? He still thinks that he can outsmart the system. He still thinks that he can game the system. He still thinks that he can get away with it. And he doesn't. Well, in the end, he almost did. We'll speak about that tomorrow. I don't know what to say other than he doesn't take no for an answer. He's very persistent. And he's trying to catch his opportunity. And what are the messages here? The message is, don't do something that you're not supposed to do. It's a very basic message, right? Don't do something you're not supposed to do. Even donkeys sometimes have that clarity of right and wrong even more than human beings because we justify, rationalize things that we know in our heart of hearts is not right. That's it. What else? What other significance about the donkey and the donkey speaking? I think as I said before, I think on a very basic level, the message here is these are God's blessings to you. These are not self-induced powers, self-generated powers. It's from God. God can easily give it to a donkey more than give it to you. So the donkey can speak. You can speak. Even donkeys can speak if I wish. You have prophetic visions. A donkey has prophetic visions also, if I choose it to be. So you're nothing special other than the fact that I've given you this great gift. Use it for good. Don't use it for bad. You insist on using it for bad? Good luck. We'll see where that goes. All right, so that's the story. And by the way, God doesn't take away Balaam's free choice. Even when God transforms his curses to blessings, it's still not taking away his free choice. He chose freely three times to curse the Jewish people. Now, the outcome is a blessing, but his choice was the negative choice. We'll speak about that a little bit more tomorrow. Okay, so that's it for today. Hopefully, you learned some interesting stories of the Torah, along with some positive life messages. I think the main thing is we have to make good choices, not convince ourselves that we'll get away with the negative choices, and use our gifts only for good. And no fear-mongering, right? That's how we started. Okay, any questions, comments, insights? Let me check the chat, see if I missed anything here. How does Chabad Feminist Interpretation view the she-donkey, male ego? I don't know, I haven't seen it in those terms.
You alluded it early on, that there's some interesting stories about him mounting the she-donkey. I mean,
The Talmud says that he had a physical relationship with the she-donkey.
That's what I'm saying.
Which makes it all the more, I don't know what the right word is, all the more interesting, ironic, telling, or whatever is the, fill in the adjective there. that he, you know, he beats her up and she shows him. It's just a, I don't know, it's an interesting power dynamic there, or just, it's a bizarre dynamic.
It's a very hard thing in a short time to gather the whole, it's a difficult, challenging lesson in this short time.
Yeah. Look, listen, there's more to talk about on that specific piece of it, but I think the basics we covered and kind of like the basic life lessons, I think, come out from this.
Yeah. You know, the male ego only because you said he doesn't have patience, remember? You said he doesn't have patience, he gets frustrated, so I said,
but it's such a powerful dialogue. She says, have I ever done anything to you that wasn't in your best interest?
Oh, yeah. And why does he feel humiliated? That's right. That's
right.
That's a joke.
He says, oh, right. You have humiliated me. I mean, wow, how quickly you get humiliated. Like, what's the, like, stop, right. As you said, stop being so full of yourself. Why not? You know, that's another lesson. Why not, what's the word I'm looking for? Why not ascribe a positive motive as opposed to a negative motive? Why jump to a conclusion you're out to get me. Oh, look at this. You're out to humiliate me and get me and destroy me and this and that. Why does he run to that? Why doesn't he think, you know what? She's been very reliable, right? She's never, again, all right. But she's never done anything to harm me, right? On the contrary. So let me assume that there's something that she knows that's for the good, that's in my best interest. No, he hits her. What are you doing? You're humiliating me. Anyway, it's also a lesson. Ascribe best intentions to the other. Ascribe positive intentions. Don't, in Hebrew, we would say, dan lekav zchus, judge someone on the side of merit and not on the side of liability at first glance. Okay, all right, so lots of things to think about. With this, I'll sign off. And, oh, Mark, did you want to say something? Sorry.
Yeah, it was just a quick thing. It said the reason he saddled the donkey himself was, in my Rashi, said because his hatred of Israel was so great, he didn't want to wait.
Yeah, and the contrast is Abraham. God tells Abraham for the Akedah to bring a son as an offering, and it uses a similar expression that Abraham woke up in the morning and saddled the donkey. In other words, he himself did the preparations. Balaam was so eager to curse the Jewish people, he did it himself early in the morning. So there's your contrast. And yeah, it shows about the eagerness for evil that Balaam had. And that's another point in the story to indicate he wasn't innocently going along, you know, oh, God said I could go, so let me go. No, it was much more devious than that. And it wasn't just that he got paid to do it. He was excited about doing it. I think that's Mark's point. He was excited about this mission. Yeah. All right. Good. Thank you. Thank you for all of the conversations and the additional insights and input. All right. Tomorrow, we're going to wrap up the story. We'll do a condensed version because it's the story plays out. We'll talk about the three attempts that Balaam tries to curse the people and what the blessings were. We'll look at a few of the blessings and derive some beautiful life messages from the blessings that Balaam eventually enunciates. So that's all tomorrow. See you then. Tonight is Tanya, 8 p.m. Think different. Link is on our website. I'll send out an email a little bit later if you're on that list, and hope to see you then as well. All right. Take care, all. See you guys.
Bye.
Bye, Stephanie. Bye, Sandrine. Bye, Matt.
Bye.
Take care.